You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, April 30th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, David Dayan on this net neutrality fight. It's a big one, folks, and I want you to understand the history of how we got here. Also on the program today, big ruling from the Supreme Court on the EPA's authority to regulate coal-fired power plants and the pollution they spew into other states. And as a bonus, Scalia shows what a moron he is. In Wisconsin, a judge, federal judge, strikes down the voter ID law on very important grounds. Meanwhile, in Oklahoma, a capital punishment gone awry. Oklahoma tortured a man to death, essentially, last night. Coming on the heels of a new report which argues that we kill innocent people, which of course we do. We'll talk about capital punishment. Frankly, you don't need either one of those stories, as far as I'm concerned, to say that we should not be killing people as a state in that way. I mean, I don't think we should be killing people as a state, period. Also on the program today, Donald Sterling, not quite former NBA owner, but banned from the NBA for life, being at least cajoled, forced into selling his team, perhaps, fined a couple million bucks, not so bad, but... We will talk about that. Very weak numbers, the GDP growth for this quarter. I got tons of stories here, folks. And Bundy, in a play to make himself relevant again. We will talk about all of that. That story is just ridiculous. I don't even know what to say about
that. I'm still racist. I'm still violating the law. Can somebody please... stick a microphone in my face.
We got
God's
a story
sake.
About Media Matters apparently fighting unionization in their shop. I don't even understand how that happens, frankly. Yes. And also, Shep Smith apparently locked in the closet at Fox. We will talk about all of this and more, but first, we're going to take a quick break. I pre-taped an interview with David Dayan the other day. Don't freak out, folks. It's just coincidentally 2 days in a row, people's schedules were just off by a little bit, and so we pre-taped. It's not a big deal.
The Taibbi was day of.
Taibbi was the
literally
hour of.
Moments before.
Dayan is a day in to pass.
Well, Dayan's a little different. Let's not dwell on it.
All right, we're going to take a break when we come back, that interview with David Dayan. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. David Dayen, writer for just about everyone, as far as I can tell, but talking about net neutrality in his piece in The New Republic. Sad but true, the only way to save the open internet requires sucking up to corporate titans. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
All right, so David, let's go through this and walk people through the history of net neutrality. When we say net neutrality, we basically mean that there's no discrimination between one service that travels through the internet pipes, as it were, versus another. Let's, before we catch up with the latest proposal by Tom Wheeler, the former chief lobbyist for the telecom industry, or one of, and now FCC head. Let's go back. Let's travel back in time, shall we, to 1996. What happened in 96 that implicates where we are today?
Well, the Telecommunications Act of 1996 came out, and it offered a way for the FCC to label broadband internet, which at the time wasn't really a large contributor in the internet space. Most of us still had dial-up back in 1996.
That's right.
But what this would do is it offered a path for the FCC to classify broadband internet as a common carrier service. And what that means is it's no different from your telephone. When we're talking about the phones, you cannot, as a telephone provider, you cannot discriminate between one call coming through and another call. It's a common carrier. It's basically a utility. It's like the pipes that go to your house and provide you with water from the local reservoir. Or whatever it is. So there was an opportunity there. In 2002, Michael Powell, who was the head of the FCC at the time, he's Colin Powell's son, he's now a major telecom lobbyist. You're noticing a pattern here because Tom Wheeler, who is now the head of the FCC, used to be a major telecom lobbyist. Michael Powell in 2002 said that broadband internet is not a common carrier service. It is not a utility. It is an information service. There's a two-way conversation going on. There are additional things that an internet service provider provides. And at the time, what he was talking about was things like email that usually, you know, you would get at the time an email address from your internet service provider. Sometimes you still do. Or other various factors that turned it into an information service. And that meant that the anti-discrimination statutes under the Telecommunications Act weren't necessarily available to broadband internet because it wasn't labeled in this fashion as a common carrier service.
So we had two classifications. One was telecommunications services as a common carrier. The other is information services. And, you know, we should note,
right.
You know, in 1996, it was AOL and CompuServe. And, to contemplate communication in the way that we have it today in 96 was very hard. I mean, you know, you dial up and,
yeah.
You know, if you were lucky, you'd be able to
completely
click on one link
ball.
in a matter of 45 minutes, I think it was. And you'd read a story and you'd be amazed that we were in the future. So prior to 2002, was it considered essentially a common carrier, or was it just sort of nebulous?
Yeah, there weren't rules that were written just yet. So the ability existed at the time for, discrimination on various content and toll booths set up on the internet, basically, by internet service providers charging content producers to get their sites loaded faster. But at the time, as you said, there was AOL, there was CompuServe, there were GeoCities sites. There weren't that many things that took a long time to load. We didn't have video on the internet in large measure until 2004, 2005. There weren't a lot of real uses for internet service providers to say, I'm not going to load your website fast enough. It just wasn't as critical. And by 2002, those things had advanced to the point where you could see a more critical issue here. The other issue was that the internet service provider space wasn't as concentrated at that time as it is today. I mean, when you're talking about the internet service provider, you're talking about who you pay for your internet connection. And right now, that's largely Comcast and AT&T and maybe Verizon. And that's pretty much it across the country. I mean, I remember having in previous years a very localized internet service provider that was not a big company. But today, because you have this concentration, there's far more possibility for an ISP to charge for content, make a load of money off it, and to have that have a real impact, because if you're Netflix and Comcast says you have to pay to reach these subscribers, you're paying to reach millions of subscribers rather than tens of thousands or however many in a less concentrated world.
And so back in 2007, the idea of net neutrality started gaining traction. Maybe back in 2004 or 5, I'm not really sure exactly when it cropped up, but yeah. But I do recall that in 2007, Barack Obama at I think it was an MTV forum, was specifically asked, an MTV forum, I think that maybe Move On was involved, I can't quite remember, but was specifically asked about this concept of net neutrality. And he went on to speak rather eloquently and specifically about the concept of net neutrality and said this is absolutely essential to the development and the sort of the democratic nature of the internet. And so this was something that he really explicitly vowed to promote. And he came in and his first FCC chair, Julius, and help me here with his last name because I can't.
Janikowski.
People anticipated that he would basically reclassify the internet as telecommunications, as a common carrier, because of just how important it has become, certainly then and even more so now, to the everyday functioning of people's lives.
Absolutely. And he was very eloquent about that. And all of these problems with regulating in this space to ensure no discrimination on content on the internet, all of it goes away if you just reclassify to a common carrier service. All of it. If you try to shoehorn regulations through this information service classification, you're inevitably going to come up with problems. So Janikowski's first stab at this, he did not reclassify. He went through information service. There was a lawsuit, and the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a very conservative court of appeals, agreed with Verizon, who was the company that sued in this case, that you could not do what you could not satisfy this net neutrality if you did not reclassify. Under the current classifications, under the current statutes, it was not available as something that could be done. And so,
and specifically, they were using sections.
The drawing board.
And specifically, they were using section 706, right? I mean, that was the sort of the provision that They wanted to try and use the authority granted to them under 706 to impose...
Oh, the Telecommunications Act of 1996,
To impose this regime where you can't have the situation where Comcast wants to promote its own music service, and so they squeeze the pipes for iTunes, or and you can come up with 100 different other sort of variants of that. Their political podcast is going to get the preferential tubes, whereas the Majority Report is going to get the thin, reedy, hollow tubes. Well, I guess you want your tubes to be hollow in that situation, but
no, you don't.
And so there was a court case, the first court case, when they were sued, their scheme basically failed. Yes.
Yeah, it failed. And, you know, I believe it's failed on a number of occasions, and they keep trying to go back, without doing this reclassification. And now, essentially, what Wheeler has done is say, I give up. You can go ahead and price differently. You can have content providers pay more for a fast lane on the internet to reach their subscribers and their viewers and audience. And I, as the FCC, will monitor this and ensure that this is commercially reasonable, which is a very vague term. Essentially, I guess, prevent gouging is the theory, but there's not much teeth behind. I don't see how there are any teeth behind that, because we're already in a situation where Verizon has successfully sued in court to break down the FCC's attempt to regulate under the information service, under Section 706, and I would just see this as Comcast or as the FCC just crying wolf again and again and again, saying, "Well, you better not be unreasonable about this," and then, you know, the goalposts get moved on what's unreasonable, and who knows what the FCC can actually do in that at that point, once they've already opened up the floodgates and allowed for discrimination. And it is discrimination, because if I have the choice of two restaurants and one of them offers this free and clear driveway for me to pull up into, and the other one I have to hack through a mile of jungle, As someone who wants to eat, I'm going to go to the restaurant that is more viable for me to get to. And that's what you're going to see. And this is attractive not only to the ISPs, who get reward out of this, financial reward, but it's attractive to the large content providers, people like Google and Comcast, who can then sort of muscle out or narrow their competition, because they're the only ones who can afford to pay for the fast lane.
All right, so let's focus on that part of your restaurant metaphor. Mm-hmm. So for them, the incentive here is the incentive is to even actually for them as the behemoth, okay, the chain restaurant, to say we're willing to even spend even more than we would want to, because if we effectively raise the cost of creating this sort of pristine driveway to our restaurants, yeah, it's actually going to keep the little mom and pop restaurants from being able to engage in that. So their incentive is perverse here, because they would actually be willing to pay more, because it will Bigfoot the smaller restaurants.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is different than how some of the other fights over internet content discrimination have gone. The big fight of a couple years ago was over an anti-piracy law called the Stop Online Piracy Act.
SOPA.
And in this case, SOPA. And Hollywood was trying to get this passed, the music and movie industries, so that ISPs would have to take down websites whenever there was a subjective copyright claim made by the music, movie industry, or whoever had a copyright claim. And in that case, Google and some of these other content providers, the big ones, had a reason to want to stop that, because they couldn't possibly police their sites 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to see if there was some copyright claim that was put on by a user. You know, most of these sites, Twitter, Facebook, or user-generated content, this would be detrimental, severely detrimental to their business. So they worked in common cause with activists who wanted to keep the Internet free and open, and ultimately took down the Stop Online Piracy Act. It never even got a vote. This is a different situation, because you might not have that common cause between activists and large tech firms who might see it in their interest to create a fast lane that only they could use.
So, all right, let's. I want to return to that, because that talks about the sort of the dynamic of the fight that is in front of us here. But I want to also turn to the other half of the equation in terms of allowing providers to provide that pristine driveway, and that is the other side of the coin, which is the jungle that one would have to wade through to get to the restaurant. Under Wheeler's proposal, presumably there would be a baseline. So it couldn't be a jungle. It would have to be just sort of like a, I mean, I guess presumably it would be like the thicket that exists now, maybe. Right. But as we move.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that there's a baseline in terms of some sort of, you know, megabit speed or anything that the FCC is going to sit there as a floor. I think that the idea is that nobody could be discriminated against. And if everybody is on the same crappy slow lane, then no one is necessarily being discriminated against. But you have to look at this in terms of market incentives. You know, we have far worse broadband in this country in terms of speed than many other countries in the world. The World Economic Forum puts the U.S. 35th in broadband speed. And one of the reasons for this, the telecoms, Comcast, AT&T, say that they just don't have enough, they can't afford the build-out of faster broadband. And so if they're getting money from large incumbents to use a fast lane, they're going to invest in the fast lane. They're going to ensure that there's a premium there, that there's a real difference between a fast lane that is paid for, that you can get lightning quick downloads and lightning quick load times on your internet websites, versus the slow lane, which will just become slower. There is no incentive for the telecoms to upgrade anything on the regular internet if there's this faster internet that's being paid for. You want to make it attractive, presumably, for companies to pay for it. So there, it's clear to me that not only would this discriminate, you know, one set of content against another, but that internet top speed times on the vast majority of stuff, not Google or Netflix or whatever, whoever's paying for it, the load times for the free internet will be slower. I mean, it's just very clear that that's what would be the result of it.
I mean, it functions almost like an anchor, right? I mean, assuming,
sure,
best case scenario, that it says, okay, it cannot get worse than it is today. There's no sort of impetus to make it better at all, and it freezes almost the vast majority of the internet for those without the means to buy that high speed lane. It freezes it almost in amber, right? I mean, we are stuck with,
and I don't see that the FCC even does any sort of research into those speed times anyway. Like, I don't think the FCC has at its disposal, you know, I don't even know what to call it, a thermometer or something where they can judge speed times from on a day-to-day basis. They just don't do that. That's not part of their purview. So we're going to get this information from the other people who you know, perform these tests. But the FCC just it doesn't operate that way, which is why that the idea that they can micromanage and regulate every part of this, make sure it's commercially reasonable, that's just not traditionally, that has not been the FCC's job and stock and trade. So I don't see them suddenly upping their game into this regulatory agency that can micromanage each little content deal between a telecom and a service and a content provider, that they're going to be able to make sure that everything is commercially reasonable and everyone can get the content that they want. It just doesn't seem viable to me.
I mean, even in the rosiest scenario where they say that the way that we're going to fashion this aspect of what is reasonable in terms of a floor for that lower internet is that it has to be at 75%, let's say, or whatever. They pick some percentage of the speed of the high-speed highway. So as the high-speed one gets better, this one necessarily has to increase. But that seems just unlikely. In that instance, all it will do is it will provide sort of a ballast or anchor on the high-speed internet. And so we'll be stuck always in this position of having a subpar internet relative to the rest of the world. And for those people who don't have the ability to pay, it'll be a subpar internet or a subpar internet.
And two other things that are important here. One, innovation is crushed by this possibility, because the large incumbents will have this demonstrated advantage over anyone who wants to be a barrier to jump into this market. Think about what the internet looked like 5 years ago, and think about it today. And most of the names that you hear about today, many of them weren't around 5 years
right.
ago, or certainly not around in the version that they are right now. So none of those ones that weren't around 5 years ago would be around in the next 5 years under this scenario. The incumbents would have a huge, huge competitive advantage over anyone trying to be a barrier. And the internet traditionally has evolved very quickly with a lot of innovation because of this concept and principle that everyone's content gets served at the same speed. That's a huge reason. And the second thing I want to point out is that if you have these incumbents who are paying for the fast lane, who's going to pay for that? The customers are going to pay for that eventually. It's going to trickle down. So you'll be paying more for Netflix because Netflix is paying more to their internet service provider to get that faster speed for you. So ultimately,
the
individual is paying here.
And with the end of making sure that there's no Netflix competitor, right? I mean,
exactly.
So the
internet is, the internet individual user is paying for the monopoly created by this two-tiered internet. It's a ridiculous situation.
All right, so let's. There's two things here. One is some of the pushback that we're seeing is that this has got to be something that Congress deals with, as opposed to reclassification. Why, when I read, whether it's on Vox.com or some piece in National Journal, or I listen on NPR, and they say the FCC just can't reclassify because it opens up a can of worms. What's in that can of worms? I mean, I should say, let me rephrase that. What are those worms?
Right. The worms are Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon, and all their money. That's the only worms.
Now,
the FCC could reclassify tomorrow. There is nothing stopping them. They could even just say that there are two sides to internet broadband, the part where you call and the part where the internet service provider responds, and they could just say that the response has to be without discrimination and as a common carrier. That is Tim Wu's proposal. Tim Wu is the guy who invented the term net neutrality, is a professor, and that is a proposal that he made to the FCC that Mozilla, among other internet companies, have embraced. So
break that down for us. What does that mean? What does
that
distinction mean when I call as opposed to when they respond? I mean, what does that mean in practical terms?
In practical terms, it means that any time, you know, the call and response is mainly the call is when you type in Netflix.com.
Okay.
And that goes to the internet service provider. The response is the internet service provider saying, oh, you want Netflix.com, and then bringing it back to you. So the response could be common carrier. The call could be an information service, and maybe that's a different scenario. But largely, when you're looking at it in that form, the content would be neutral at that level. So that's a way to do it. But reclassifying is the easiest way to do it, and it can be done. It's the fact that cable and wireless and phone services have lots and lots and lots and lots of money, and they've invested in members of the FCC who once were lobbyists and now are working for this federal agency, and the can of worms would be that these incumbents, this telecom industry, wouldn't like it.
Well,
they might try to sue, and you know, we've seen how that goes. And maybe they would have a point, but the D.C. Circuit, even in their ruling, offered a path by reclassification for the FCC to get the rules that clearly they seek.
So people should understand that the court itself said you guys should just reclassify.
The court itself said, here's the path, take the path.
And so let me ask you this: it's a fairly obvious question, but are those worms? To belabor this, are those worms any less virile, I should say, in terms of getting Congress to simply amend the Telecommunications Act and say it's a common carrier? I mean, that's the thing I don't understand. Like, the answer is Congress, even though Congress is just as bought as anything else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the idea that it would be somehow easier to go through Congress than to go through a federal agency's rule writing process is, you know, I mean, I don't think that's been borne out by history, certainly recent history. So it's silly to throw this back on Congress and think that that's somehow an easier lift or an easier process. The FCC has the ability to deal with this. The Congress has done its job in the 1996 Telecommunications Act. It's merely a matter of updating that for the times, and the FCC has it within its power to do that.
And so when you use the analogy, or you sort of explicate the fight, the SOPA battle, and say that the sides, those who line up for and against this are a little bit different now, who, if activists are looking for an ally, and this, again, is one of those situations where it's the battle between industries, and the best that we can do as little peons is to sign up on one side of that battle. Who's on our side?
It's unclear at this point, because there really hasn't been there's been a lot of silence on the part of Silicon Valley in the days since Chairman Wheeler's proposal came out. I mean, certainly Google, which is an ISP through Google Fiber, is probably not going to be the leader of a movement against ISPs being able to charge for faster content. Netflix has been probably the most vocal firm out there and offers an opportunity. It's a sad comment that activists have to think about which business they have to lobby in order to get the public interest served on the FCC, but that's where we're at. And
the reality is
that it will take. Yeah,
the reality is, if you're a content producer like myself, or if you're someone who puts you know, videos up that are not YouTube, if you're, I guess, Vimeo or something like that, you're just not as big of a heavy hitter to sort of marshal those forces.
Yeah, and I think that the smaller groups can you know, take a little more risk, because this really does threaten their business model and their survival. But it's probably going to take one of these big groups to step out and be fairly true to their word. I mean, the Internet Association, which is the large kind of umbrella group, has paid lip service to supporting net neutrality for years. They now there is this mortal threat to it, and they need to do something about it. And they need to sort of follow the principles and ideals that they have professed for so many years.
Well, I guess time will tell. But in the meantime, people can we've got all sorts of resources on majority.fm where people can email in their comments. The comment period is open for another couple of weeks. The decision, I think, is going to be made in May.
Let's clarify here. So May 15th is when the FCC will have a public meeting to determine whether or not to go forward with the notice of proposed rulemaking. And that's what these rules are. That's the stage that they're in. They're proposed rules. So even if they go forward, even if they vote to go forward on May 15th, that begins a comment process, and the rules do not get finalized for many months thereafter. So this is going to be a long fight, and May 15th is really just the beginning. But if you can stop this thing before it gets started on May 15th, that would obviously be preferable to having to drag this out longer and longer and longer.
And so groups that have engaged in this Demand Progress, Roots Action, I mean, there seems to be a lot of groups out there that are doing this. Am I naive to think that it does actually help to sign a petition and send in comments?
I think it does in this case. And particularly, I think, the large firms, the content providers, will be looking to see how much public outcry there is, because there is ultimately maybe some reputational risk that comes with being silent. There's going to be a need to show a major pushback here in order for the coalition to be built to put a stop to it. That just seems like is what's going to have to happen. And so, I don't sign petitions very often, but in this case, anything you see out there, it's probably a good idea let the FCC know exactly what kind of a backlash this sellout will have engendered.
David Dayan, always a pleasure. Now, if I want to sign up for your email that you send out weekly that tells me what you've written, where do I go to do that? Because I'm one of those people who I like getting all the stories from my favorite writers in an email. And you're one of them. So where do I go to get that?
Yes. So you go to tinyletter.com/David Dayan.
All right.
And you can subscribe there. It just takes a minute.
And let me offer this. Why don't you buy daviddayannewsletter.com redirect?
That's not a bad idea. And I need you as my business manager.
No, you don't. Believe me, buddy.
On a more consistent basis.
No, you don't. But I appreciate you coming on and talking to me about this.
Thanks a lot.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, head into the funner half of the program. It's not going to be, some of it's going to be, it's all going to be fun. Let me put it this way. But some's going to be lighter fun than others. The EPA ruling, the Wisconsin ID ruling.
That's actually an interesting third category of not fun, but good news.
No, fun, but not...
Well, not traditionally fun.
Non-traditional. It's fun.
Sam Cedar fun.
Sam Cedar fun, and then,
But good news, and good news is fun.
Other people's fun.
Good news is fun.
Yeah, good news is fun. Now I'm glad we settled that. All right, folks, you know the drill.
All this and more in the member section.
That's right.
A great example of what you will not have to deal with in the fun half of the program.
Let me just wrap up this. The chairman of the FCC, I wanted to get to this. The chairman of the FCC put out a blog post on the FCC website that already on his heels about the response to this proposal. He starts off by reminding everybody that President Obama promised that as a candidate that he would seek to promote net neutrality. Then he says, some recent commentary has had a misinformed interpretation of the open internet notice of proposed rulemaking currently before the commission. Now, what's interesting about this, this is the way he leads paragraph two. He doesn't go on to dispel the interpretation of the proposed rule. Listen to what he says. There are two things that are important to understand. First, this is not a final decision by the commission, but rather a formal request for input on a proposal as well as a set of related questions. Second, as the notice makes clear, all options for protecting and promoting an open internet are on the table. So in other words, he says, hey, there are some misconceptions about this proposal. One is people don't seem to realize that we have an open comment period. And two is we haven't decided yet. So this guy can't even defend the proposal. And then there's another couple of pages of jibber jabber, frankly, honestly. And I don't say that lightly. He goes on to say that in its Verizon versus FCC decision, the D.C. Circuit Court laid out a blueprint for how the FCC could use Section 706 of the Telecommunications Act of 96 to create open internet rules that would stick. Okay. The reality is that in a court case called Brand X, back in the late 90s, I believe it was, early 2000s, the court explicitly said, you have the authority to change classification. That's why Michael Powell went ahead and changed the classification from common carrier telecommunication service to information provider. This case, the Verizon FCC case, basically says, you know, you could fashion something under 706, but it didn't say this is how you would get an open internet. No, it just said you could fashion something that would regulate the internet in Section 706. And Wheeler very well may be doing the only thing that could fashion it under 706, which is to basically say, hey, we'll make it sort of voluntary.
Another voluntarism fantasy.
Yes. But then he goes on to write, I do not believe we should leave the market unprotected for multiple more years while lawyers for the biggest corporate players tie the FCC's protections up in court. Now, I'll address why he thinks that in a moment. Notwithstanding this, all regulatory options remain on the table. If the proposal before us now turns out to be insufficient, or if we observe anyone taking advantage of the rule, in other words, once we implement it, we find it's insufficient or someone is taking advantage of this new rule, I won't hesitate to use Title II. However, unlike with Title II, we can use the court's roadmap to implement open internet regulations now rather than endure additional years of litigation and delay. That paragraph is the biggest pile of BS that I've seen in paragraph form in a long time. I went out there on a limb. Went out there on a limb and didn't have any way to close up that that metaphor. But look, here's the bottom line. It is quite possible that they classified it as Title II, and you see court challenges to that. Although, understand, it has already been explicitly ruled that the FCC has that authority. It's already been explicitly ruled. And the issue as to whether or not there's no guarantee under any new scheme, if it's sufficient, that you will not also get court challenges to that. Right? I mean, they thought the last scheme was going to prevail. And so if it means two more years of court battles to get Title II classification, there's no one in their right mind who wouldn't think that's a good trade. Because I got news for you. you're not going to see big moves by the ISPs one way or another if the classification goes through. They're not going to build a business model around the FCC not having that authority, because you already have a court case, you already have precedent. So it is really those industry people who would want to close down the internet, or I should say, you know, make a toll lane, who would be frozen. Not vice versa. I mean, this is just a big pile of BS. So I just wanted to make that clear. There is an email on the site for people to contact the FCC as part of this. And I think this letter from Wheeler is, in fact, indication that the initial outcry has already got them on their heels.
And I also just said, I mean, you know, obviously write what you feel, but I think to have just a kind of uniformity around people pushing the common carrier reclassification, that I think that that's probably the simplest and best thing to convey in any type of communication about that.
That's right. Internet is a common carrier.
That's the main thing.
Title II classification, but I would keep common carrier in there.
Definitely.
And your new rule does not support an open internet or net neutrality. That's it. And I really genuinely think there's one of those occasions where it makes a big difference. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to head into the fun, in quotes, with an asterisk.
Welcome back to the fun half of the program. New EPA regulations.
Hey, you're not going to believe what the Supreme Court said about the EPA. Whoa, if you got one of those coal-fired power plants, it's time to start wondering what kind of chemical agents are floating into a nearby state. We'll be right back.
Meanwhile, if you're in the middle class and you're feeling poorer, well, you're right. That's right. Inequality increasing at a rapid rate. We're going to get to that more too, folks.
And you're just going to love what's going to happen to these three potential federal Fed nominees. It's all going to happen before Memorial Day when we count down the top 100 favorite policy maneuvers that we've seen in the past year.
That's right. It's all policy that maneuver we'll Wednesday, back. Hump Day with a policy maneuver right here on the Charity Report.
Right. It's a two for two. Tuesday. Oh, it's Wednesday. Oh, is it already hump day? All right.
I love it.
And that's right. A federal appellate judge has shot down those Wisconsin voter ID rules. You're just going to tickle yourself to death when you find out how that could spread across the country.
Good news for folks who don't like systemic racial discrimination when it comes to their voting or anything else for that matter. We're going to get to the Clipper story,
oh,
too.
Oh, God.
I'd love to just talk like this
right.
All day.
Yeah, I would too.
For all obligations.
Yeah, right there goes Donald Sterling.
Sorry about that, honey. Not going to be able to help with that now.
Oh,
otherwise,
yeah.
Occupied.
All right.
Sam Cedar, not enough sleep the
no.
last couple of days.
When the guys want to make fun of me, that's basically what they do. They launch into a dry diatribe about Medicare reimbursement rates and then talk about how I'm not getting any sleep. And the reality is I'm not getting any sleep.
And there is the dry diatribe as well.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's...
And now I have this like back problem. It's agonizing. Right off the heels of the food poisoning from last week. All right, folks. So if you want to hear more of my complaints, please, by all means, become a member today. It's just pennies a day, and you could have an entire another 50 minutes of some of the...
You become one of the gang, folks.
There you go.
The better half of the show. Fun
That's
half
right.
of the program.
We actually, you get a free CD on how to talk like this. All right. Become a member today at majority.fm. Folks, it is your support that keeps this show alive. And also, of course, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our Amazon link. Go to majoritycreditreportkickback.com. majoritycreditreportkickback.com. click on the link, bookmark it, buy all your Amazon crap through there. You'll notice no difference. But we will, of course, see a kickback. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. If you buy coffee at the store, there's no reason for you not to do this. It's a good deal on coffee, 10% off. It's a great coffee. They'll deliver it right to your door. Get a couple of bags. You can have it ground or not ground, whatever you like. Justcoffee.coop. Number 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920 is the number. You, of course, can IM the show through our app. The app is you can pick up at majorityapp.com. It's a review on iTunes. What's wrong with that? Talking over music.
We'd like to see you there, too, folks.
No, just don't have it. Right before you continued speaking, I quickly pulled down your slider and then realized what I was doing and put it back up.
Yeah. All right, folks. See.
Just letting people
see you
know.
In the better half. Don't forget, number 646-257-3920 is the number today. 39th caller will receive...
39th caller will get a libertarian debunking, even if you were not a libertarian.
That's right.
39th caller, libertarian caller, regardless of what you call in for.
That's right.
Half the program.
Got a question about Sterling? Too bad. You're going to get a libertarian debunked. Oh, yeah. Don't forget, tomorrow on the program, we will have a professor from Loyola, a libertarian. All right. We'll be back in a moment.